Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 6th of Av. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to study the thoughts of the Bach, Rav Yoel Sirkis of the early 1600s, on making a bracha on stolen and other prohibited foods, and the issue of whether we make a bracha on those foods. I just wanted to, right at the start, point out something that I haven't really noted before. This is from the 6th of Av of 16, of Shin Pei Dalet, which was 1624, and it's interesting, I just haven't paid attention to it, but it's interesting that already back then the Bach is appending dates to his tshuvot. That's not common. I've been looking now for a while already for tshuvot with certain dates on them, and not many mishivim until the 20th century put dates even fairly consistently. The Bach does it. The Noda Behuda does it often in the late 1700s. The Chatam Sofer does it in the 1800s, and then many, many people in the 1900s already start doing it. But that idea of dating tshuvot seems to me to sort of grow over time, and the Bach is a very early adopter of this idea. So this is a tshuva that he wrote on the 6th of Av, as we said, in Shin Pei Dalet. And the question is, what do we make brachot on? So the question would be, let's say somebody stole some food, and that's not a good thing. Are they allowed to make a brach on them in the beginning and the end, or they're not allowed to? So the Bach says, this is from Shurabach Chadoshos Aleph, this is the first response in the book. He says the Torah and the Beis Yosef have already discussed this issue, and he says even though the Beit Yosef, even though the Torah, I think, ruled that if somebody ate something that was usur, even if it's only usur derabanan, something that's prohibited only at a rabbinic level, you don't make a zimun on it. Meaning, so let's say you have three people eating food together, and one of them is eating a food that is prohibited derabanan. The example that comes to mind is, I think we generally assume the bisar of bechalav, that bird meat, fowl with milk, is a derabanan, is prohibited derabanan. So let's say somebody had a chicken patty cheeseburger, actual cheese cooked together. If they just put on top of each other, that might also only be derabanan. But let's say they were cooked together into a cheeseburger, but except that the burger is of chicken, that would be an issue derabanan. And that person is eating that food, and two other people are eating with their own food. They want to have a zim when they want to, at the end of benching, say rabotai nevareh, we say that they cannot do that. We don't do that. And the Shulchan Aruch also said, it's not the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah had also said, "In revarch lo b'tchila v'lo basof." You don't make a bracha before and after. Okay, so before or after, and that is like the Rambam Paskin Hilchos Brachos. I think he means that in the response project, this is the end of Perek Chet, but I think, I could be wrong, but I think he means Perek Aleph Halacha Yuten Hilchot Brachot, the Rambam Paskins, that anybody who eats something that is prohibited, whether they do it on purpose or not knowingly, eino mivarek. They don't make a bracha either to begin with, so that you can't, that wouldn't be a question of doing it unknowingly, because you wouldn't know not to make the bracha if you didn't realize it was usher. But let's say somebody eats something, and then, you know, this could happen. I know this could happen theoretically. We hope it doesn't happen. In some homes, let's say if a housekeeper is not Jewish or some other worker in the house is not Jewish, and they bring their food in and they put their food in the refrigerator and they mark it off in some way. And that's what they had been told to do. So they mark it off in some way. This is our food. Somebody walks in and doesn't realize that that's what it is, goes to the refrigerator, takes that food out and eats it. And then after they're finished eating it, find out that that was usher food. The Rambam is telling us that one who's eaten usher food, prohibited food, even unwittingly, even unknowingly, they don't make a bracha even afterwards. So the Rambam's example is, let's say somebody eats tevel. So tevel is produce that has not been properly tithed. Halachically, when one grows, when a Jew grows grain, let's say, when they have the harvest, they have to give the first bit to a Kohen, and that's Truma, and unless it's been given to a Kohen properly, that's called Tevel, and it's not allowed to be eaten by anybody, actually. And then there are things that only Tevel to Rabbanan, meaning that by Torah law, we're not obligated to give Truma, and Rabbanan came along, and Chazal came along and said, no, we're going to include this in that which has to have Truma taken from it, so that would be Truma to Rabbanan, and that means then that the produce before it's been had it taken from it would only be prohibited to Rabbanan, doesn't matter. Rambam says, you don't make a bracha, beginning or end, and all the more so, things that are even more prohibited, like non-kosher meat in various forms. So the Ravid there says, disagrees, he says it's a big mistake, because he says, it's not that you don't make a bracha, it's only that you don't have a zimun. So those are two different concepts, right? A bracha is, if before I eat something, I make a shahakol or hamotzi, I make a bracha on the food I'm about to eat. And after I'm done, I make a bracha achrona, I make a final bracha, let's say a birkat hamazon, a grace after meals. That's my personal bracha. Then there's a related halacha, but separate halacha, that if three people eat together, it's certainly by Torah, but certainly men who do it, there's a strong likelihood that if three women are eating together and want to have a zima, that they could and should. So that zima and that bonding together around the experience of being together, that is where the Ravid says that you can't create a zimun if one of the people has eaten food or is eating food that is prohibited in any way. That's the piece where we don't do it. Because, the Ravid says, the whole idea is that prohibited food doesn't have the necessary significance to create the kind of a meal where one would feel the bonding experience. Meaning, this is a whole discussion one can have about Zimun and what it is, about what it means when Jews have a Zimun together. But what it's supposed to mean is that they have created something together that has a certain significance to it, and they mark that by having their benching happen together in that way as well. Ravid is saying that prohibited foods don't have that kind of chashivut, don't have that kind of importance, that you can create this kind of bonding experience of the zimun together, and therefore you wouldn't do it. So that's the machlokas throughout the Ravid. Getting back to the Bach, he says that he thinks, though, that within this discussion there's this distinction that has not been made, that people have not realized, that he thinks is actually halachically valid, and that will be between two kinds of food that are prohibited. There are foods that are prohibited in and of themselves, so such as tevel, that food that has not yet had the truma given to it, the gift to the Kohen has not yet been given, the food itself is prohibited by Torah law, or by rabbinic law, but by some halakhic prohibition that's prohibited. Same thing is true for a nevela, an animal that has not had proper shechita, has not had proper slaughter, or a trefa, an animal that before it was put to death by shechita, it had already sustained a life-ending injury, an injury that was going to eventually kill it, and therefore cannot have a kosher shechita. So in all those cases, the food itself is usur. The food itself is prohibited. But that would be different than davar hamutar mitzad atzmo el shinit fal alav isur gzela ugneva. But let's say somebody steals some food. The food is still prohibited to that person, but it's not prohibited to that person because of anything to do with the food. It's prohibited to that person by virtue of what that person did to or with the food. And in that situation, the Tzitzilia, the Bach is saying, he thinks the bracha issue is more complicated, it's not as clear. And in fact, he's going to think that you're going to make a bracha afterwards for sure. You're going to make a bracha on these foods. So that's what he's about to explain to us. It starts with the Gemara in HaGozel Kamen Bava Kama, where Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says if somebody steals an amount of wheat and then grinds it and kneads it into a dough and then bakes it and then takes challah out and wants to make a bracha on the taking out of challah, so Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says ein zeh mivarech ela minna eitz. So that's not valid. That's not a great bracha. Question is what it means. It's not a valid bracha and there shouldn't be a bracha at all. We're going to get to that. Or he means just it's not a good bracha. Anyway, it's not a bracha. It's a niyut. It's sort of a reviling of Hashem, as it were. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov quotes a verse that says, Botzea beirech nietz Hashem, which means that, so botzea means to break bread, but it also means to take a bribe. We'll get to that, I think. But and then, so basically, if somebody is botzea, they took something improperly, and they made a bracha on it, they have reviled Hashem. That's the way he's reading the verse. And Abaye there claims that it's because even though the person has changed the wheat from wheat into bread, and very often we say in halacha that if you change something sufficiently, this will be important to know when for our discussion, when somebody steals from somebody else, there's a technical discussion that has to be had about as to what happens with it. And there are occasions when the item becomes the property of the thief for various purposes, and sometimes totally the property of the thief, just that he now owes money plus a fine back to the original owner. And there are times when the item is still the original owner. So if a thief takes something steals something, right then, it still fundamentally belongs to the owner. He just stole it. He might have already what's called kinyane gezila. He might have certain responsibilities by virtue of having taken it, but fundamentally the ownership is with the original guy. But there are ways that can change. So one contributing factor, for example, could be yeush. If the original owner despairs of ever getting it back, that changes its halachic ownership status. It's no longer as fully owned by the original owner as it was. And then another thing that helps is certain kinds of shinuyim, certain kinds of change. So if something has completely changed, then there's lots of ways you could say this, but one way to say it is the original item doesn't really exist anymore, and therefore the original owner can't claim it as fully. He still owed the value of whatever he was lost plus the fine, but he doesn't really own it. So if somebody steals, so Abaye says, in terms of these issues that we're talking about now, in terms of being a bracha on the new wheat, on the new flour that's been gotten out of this wheat, he thinks the shinu doesn't make any difference. But Rava there, the bracha is pointing out, holds that shinu is kone, that once the thief has so fully changed the wheat into something else. Yes, so Rava says that the change is in fact significant enough. The original item isn't really there, and therefore this new flour really does in fact belong to the thief. But even so, the bracha isn't a great bracha. It's a minayitz bracha. The person is not, it's not a praise to Hashem that a person is praising Hashem for having the ability to eat food that he only got through an aver. And the Bach says it's like a mitzvah of aver. It's like you get to a mitzvah of being a bracha through an aver. So the Bach says, but you have to notice, the Bach says, that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's whole halacha is kind of oddly phrased. Because why do you need to tell me that he baked the bread? Isn't it true that from the moment that he had already ground up the wheat into flour, and he kneads the flour, he's already chayev in challah? Right? That's the moment, it's called Gilgal, the moment of becoming obligated to give a piece of the flour to, or of the new, of the flour to a kohen, is at Gilgal, is when you take the flour and you put the water and you start kneading it together. That's what it is. So why does the Elazar ben Yaakov speak about having baked it? So the Tilsut there says that even though he'd already made a bunch of changes, Tilsut is trying to suggest that the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is trying to say, don't think that it's only because he didn't make enough changes that it's still a minayit, that the bracha is still a ni'ut of Hashem, a reviling of Hashem, God forbid, a denigration, whatever it is, a prayer that is undesirable for Hashem. Even though this person has now made many, many changes, he's ground it into flour, he's put water into the flour to knead it into a dough, he's made it into a dough, he's baked the dough, even all that way down the road, it still qualifies as a ni'ut. So the Bach doesn't like it because he says it's not clear why. First of all, Abaye seems to have held that no matter how many changes, it still belongs to the original owner. And then, according to Rava, if you're going to say that it's even you made a lot of changes, then it's really a question of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, because how does he know? Maybe the verse is only referring to the case where there's only one change, but maybe, in fact, many changes would have been good enough. And therefore, the Bach offers and suggests a different answer. He says, L'fichach nira desfir l'Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. He thinks Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds, even though somebody stole something, right, based on botzea bets of taking bribes, nonetheless, so even though the word means botzea bets can mean to like take a bribe, it can also mean botzea like to break bread. We spoke about it as betzia tapat. And so the Bach suggests that it's coming to teach us that it's only that bracha of betzia that one is a midnight. It's like, obviously, he points out, can't be a real limud because the bracha rishona, the first bracha we make on bread, hamotzi lechem haaretz, is clearly not a d'oraita bracha, and therefore it's not the psukim. You wouldn't have verses referring to that situation and that issue. But nonetheless, as we're reading, he says, that's what it's telling us. It's that bracha that one is the minayitz, that one's bracha is a bad bracha and a denigration of Hashem, sadly, in some way. But the bracha afterwards would not be. And that's what he thinks the point of that Gemara, one of the points of that Gemara is, that the bracha afterwards would not be, and that afterwards one would make a birkat hamazon on the bread that was eaten. Now, why would that be? We'll come back to it in a second, but he points out this Yerushalmi that says something very, that he thinks is something very similar. That says, Chala tani matzah gezula, I'm sorry, in the end of Chala, in Yerushalmi, the end of the fourth chapter of Chala, they talk about matzah gezula. Let's say somebody stole matzah, and they are going to eat it on Pesach, basically. So there it says, you can't make a bracha on Asul HaVarech Alel. Amar of Hoshaya or Fayo says, our Pasuk, of Hosea Berech Nietz Hashem, because it's not a bracha, it's not a pleasing blessing to Hashem. And Rav Yonah says, that's true in the beginning, but Vasov, no, at the end not, because Damim Hu Chayav Lo. He's only obligated to the original owner for money. We'll come back to that. And then Rav Yonah and Rav Yossi have further discussions about whether it's a mitzvah or not a mitzvah that one does. So Amar Rabbi Eila, When the Torah says the words Eilah mitzvot, these are the mitzvot. Eilah says that means that if we do them right, they're mitzvot. But if we don't do them right, they're not mitzvot. So in this discussion, the Bach thinks it's clear that the Botzea Beret Mietz Hashem verse was only suggested, only brought up by Rehoshaya in terms of the bracha beforehand, because it's after Rehoshaya says Botzea Beret Mietz Hashem that Rav Yonah then introduces the conversation about what about the after bracha. And that's the way he reads the whole sugi. Rehoshaya says Botzea Beret, and remember that for him Betzia doesn't mean just taking it by stealing it, but also that he's being Botzea, he's breaking the bread. So he says, yeah, Rav Hoshaya means that when one were to say an alakil amatzah and hamotzi lechem min haaretz before eating the matzah, those would be brachot that were damaged by the fact that the matzah is stolen. And then Rav Yonah comes right afterwards and says, but basof, at the end, damim hu chayavlo, it's a matter of money. And the Bach says, v'im kein eino min na'etz. And therefore, it's not a niyutz. Why is it not a niyutz? I think how the Bach is reading the Yerushalmi is that it's saying that when it comes to theft, the meat, the food itself is not the problem. It's how I got the food that's the problem, right? So what Rav Yonah is saying is that once the food is eaten, and all that's left is a monetary obligation, then the bracha isn't relating to something that in and of itself was negative. Meaning, if somebody steals from somebody else, let's say it that way, there's two things that there are owed there. There's the original item, and there's the value of the original item. It is halakhically true that if the original item still exists, then the thief has to return the original item. But that's, in some halakhic sense, a separate obligation from the obligation to repay the owner. But the obligation to repay the owner, the Bach is saying, is if we're independent of the item. So if I have an item that doesn't really go back to the owner, or that can't go back to the owner anymore, so then the violation of the prohibition of theft is sort of in the air. It's today we would say it's in the cloud as a financial obligation. It's no longer relating to an actual object. So somebody steals matzah, they're going to make a bracha on that matzah for Pesach night. As they're addressing the matzah, that matzah itself is an item of Isser. It's an item of prohibition because it needs to be returned in its exact form, if possible, to the owner. Once it's been eaten, however, that item no longer exists, and the item that no longer exists wasn't itself an item of Isser. It was part of a prohibition of needing return to the owner. And therefore, that's how the Bach is reading it. And that's why the continuing conversation, he points out, is the discussion in the Gemara between the next two Amorayim about whether we can say ein avera mitzvah or that we say avera is a mitzvah. So the Bach reads it in the same way, meaning if the matzah is stolen, did you fulfill a mitzvah or did you not fulfill a mitzvah? So that's a question that they're having about that. First opinion was that it's not a mitzvah, and therefore any bracha you'd make on it beforehand, if you make an alakhila matzah, it's not a valid bracha. It's a bracha levatala. It's a wasted bracha because there's no mitzvah here. But Rabbi Yossi says, ein mitzvah aveira. In the Gemara, in that Yerushalmi, and the Bach says what it means is, what he thinks it means is that there's got to be a mitzvah here, and therefore he has to make a bracha. Just that the pasuk is unhappy with the bracha, and the bracha is like a niyutz. Meaning, when the pasuk says botzea berech mi'et Hashem, that if somebody makes a bracha on theft, that it's a niyutz of Hashem. It's a whatever the right translation of niyutz. It's a reviling. So a reviling, let's say a niyutz, or he right. So a reviling of Hashem, as it were, God forbid. So when we say that about a bracha, do we mean the bracha is invalid and it's a reviling, or it's valid and a reviling? So therefore, the Bach is saying, when Rav Yossi says, ein mitzvah aveira, it means that it's got to be a mitzvah because you ate matzah. It's true the matzah came from an improper source, but that would be true of mitzvah above aveira. So is that not a mitzvah, or is that it's a mitzvah that it's a problem? So he is clearly... it's not quite a mitzvah blah, 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 because it doesn't happen at the moment. A whole discussion of its own. In any case, Bach is saying he thinks that there's certainly a mitzvah here that he thinks Rav Yossi is saying in the Yerushalmi, there's certainly a mitzvah here, and therefore he has to make a bracha. Just that the bracha is called a niyutz because it's not a mitzvah, it's not a whole mitzvah because it came with an aver, it came with a sin to it. And that explains also their debate. Rav Yonah held that you can't make a bracha, and Rav Yossi said it's a bracha, just that it's a niyutz. But everybody agrees that the bracha afterwards is going to be okay because then there's no actual item anymore and there's just a financial obligation, and therefore that doesn't get in the way of making a bracha. And the Rambam means that as well, that when if you notice, the Rambam's example was that of things that were usher on their own, that had inherent usher, like tevel, or nevela, or trefa, like items that are inherently usher, like those foods, grains that haven't been, the produce that has not had truma given, or meat that has not been properly slaughtered. And he thinks that might also be a machloket of the Rambam and the Ravid. Whereas in something that's completely mutter on its own, just that it's been stolen, that he wasn't talking about. And that, the Bach thinks, the Rambam would agree with what he's saying now, that you'd make a bracha, even if the bracha wasn't used, but you make a bracha, and certainly afterwards you make a bracha. So the way the Bach has constructed it so far is that he thinks that when it comes to the bracha afterwards, everybody will agree that you make a bracha on stolen items that have now been eaten, because they're not there anymore, and it's turned into a completely financial obligation. But the bracha before, he thinks that was the debate between Rabbi Yona and Rav Yossi in the Yerushalmi. Rabbi Yona held that you don't make a bracha because beforehand you have an item here, and that item, Rav Yona is saying, even though it's not an inherent prohibition, it is sufficiently prohibited right now to the person that they would not make a bracha on it. Whereas Rav Yossi, in the box reading, holds that it's, you have to make a bracha, which is the bracha, unfortunately, will sadly count as a niyut. It won't be a full bracha, because it has an element of niyut, an element of reviling Hashem, and that the person is using an item that he or she wasn't supposed to even have in order to make a bracha to Hashem. Comes to rulings, the Bach says he thinks the halacha would follow Rav Yossi, that because he thinks that's what Rava was holding as well in Paragat Gozel, where he said, Shinui kone v'chayev avarech, that the challah, the wheat that was stolen, and was ground into flour and then kneaded into a dough, and then a dough was made of it, and then you took challah from it, that you make a bracha on it. He said shinui konet. And then you have to be mevarech, just that you're a minayit in terms of the bracha. Because the mitzvah of Avera, so he thinks that Rava and Rav Yossi are agreeing together that there are items where when it's an item of gezel, when it's an item of theft, and that's the thing that makes it prohibited, that both Rav Yossi in the Yerushalmi and Rava in the Bavli hold that as long as the person owns it and it's theirs, they would make a bracha even ahead of time, just that it's a need, it's just that there's a negative element to this bracha, and he thinks that that's what it was passed in the Haggot on the Rush, but it's only about theft where the person actually owns the bread, because if he just steals bread and eats it, so then it's not his. And if he can't make a bracha on something that's not his, even, the Bach is saying, because it's not his, and therefore you don't have any right to make a bracha. There's no way to make the bracha on it. So some stolen items one could not make a bracha on. You have to be a Talmud Chacham if you're going to be a Torah scholar when you steal something to know what to make a bracha on it. And that would be yet one more reason not to steal items because of the bracha's questions that will come up in the aftermath. But fundamentally, what his answer is that when it comes to theft, what we say in halacha is that the thief doesn't own the item for himself until there's also been a shinui. There's been some change, significant change in the item. So somebody steals flour or they steal wheat and they turn it into bread there. He thinks the papsak is that the person would make a bracha, even though that bracha has a deep flaw in it. A reminder that there's different levels of mitzvah observance, and sometimes there's a mitzvah which, yeah, it counts as a mitzvah, and yes, the person has to do it, but even as they're doing the mitzvah itself has a deep flaw in it by virtue of the circumstances that brought it about. That's a whole category to think about in terms of how we understand it. It's not like yes mitzvah, no mitzvah. Now we realize the Bach is telling us there's perfectly well-done mitzvah, there's mitzvah not so well-done, there's mitzvah with deep flaw in it. It can even in some sense be a niyutz of Hashem, sadly, a reviling of Hashem, as it were, and God forbid, but nonetheless one will be obligated to do it. That's true here. And then he points out another issue is that when it comes to theft, we have to remember that there's theft that belongs to the goslin, to the thief at some point, and there's that which does not. With a shinui, with a significant change, it can become the property of the goslin. Certainly, obviously, he or she has to pay back the original value, but the item itself is no longer that of the original owner. So now, having all said all that, the Bach closes with saying, when it comes to matzah gezula, when somebody steals matzah on Pesach, and sadly, we can easily imagine that this happens. If somebody is financially stressed and they see Pesach coming and they want to be part of the Jewish people to have a Pesach Seder like everybody else, and they so sadly don't even have matzah, and in their desperation, they steal the matzah. So there too, the Bach says, unfortunately, he thinks that there's going to be no way to make a bracha on that matzah because there's no shinui, there's no way to make that matzah the property of the thief such that with all else that's going on in their lives, such that at the very least, they'll be yotzei the mitzvah of matzah, and if it's not theirs, they also, he thinks, can't make a bracha on it ahead of time, on the bracha rishoni, you can't make a hamotzi or an alak matzah because it's not theirs in any way whatsoever. So that's the Bach's main thrust of the discussion. There's a parenthetical note here in the Shulchan Bach that on the side of this Shulchan Bach, it was written that there was somebody who claimed that, let's say, somebody had said they would never, they had taken an oath not to eat something, whatever it was, and then they ate it. You know, somebody said, I'm never going to eat olives again, right? I take an oath, not eating olives, and they ended up eating olives. So that this Gadol who's writing on the side of the Bach, or the Bach is noting on the side, is that there too, he thinks you make a bracha, tchila vasof, before and after, meaning the question is a neder like an external prohibition, like theft was, or is it inherent to the item, more like tevel or like nevela, more like items that have not been meat that hasn't been shechted, so meat that hasn't been properly slaughtered, is itself prohibited. When somebody makes a neder and they make an oath not to eat something, which one is that? Does it create an external prohibition, sort of a barrier to being allowed to eat the item, or does it become part of the item itself, such that it is? So that's the question that's going up here. So this Gadol had suggested that you would make a bracha, because the moment one, the person violates the oath, violates the neder, violates the shavua, they're going to have to make a bracha afterwards, because it's like gizela. But beforehand, they wouldn't make a bracha, because you're about to do a prohibition, and we say that when you're about to do a prohibition, we don't make a bracha. That's what his claim was. In this parenthesis here, and I'm not sure if the parenthesis is written by the Bach or written by the editors, but in any case, the parenthesis says Tzarachiyun, and I think the Tzarachiyun is, I think the item, the matter that's not yet clear is that maybe not. Maybe a neder becomes so inherently part of the prohibition, it's more like nevela meat, it's more like shechted meat. It's a whole discussion within the whole concept of the nedarim of oaths and vows in halacha. The whole idea that Hashem provided an opportunity for people sort of to create their own, even though we have a prohibition in the Torah called baltosim. We're not allowed to add the Torah or take away from the Torah, and yet Hashem left all of this room for people to construct a certain religiosity that's this, meaning if somebody says, I take, and I'm not saying recommending it, I'm just pointing it out, if somebody says, I take a vow to whatever it is, that whatever it is has now become a biblical obligation upon that person. Hashem gives people the power to create a biblical obligation or a biblical prohibition. And the question right here is what is that like? So if somebody violates that, is that like stealing, in which it's not inherent to the item? Or is it, anyway, that's all the questions. So what you have to close up today's discussion is that you have the Bach making this claim about, we have this common idea, well-known idea, that brachos are not made on items of Isra, of items of prohibition, because it's not, it's seen as an application of the Pasuk in Tehillim, and it's not a real bracha, a reading of the verse in Tehillim. It's not seen as a valid bracha, it's seen as a niyutz of Hashem, God forbid, as a reviling of Hashem. Question is, what are the items of Isra which that applies, and that's what the Bach is pointing out. There are items of Isra, of items of prohibition that are inherently themselves prohibited. And then, the most common example being theft of various sorts. If I take something that doesn't belong to me, so that's a whole different kind of thing. There's a prohibition there, but the prohibition isn't inherent to the item itself, and that can affect the bracha, especially based on the Gemaras and the Yerushalmi that the Bach had noted, especially for the bracha achrona, once the item has been eaten, when it's no longer there. So what has been eaten or what's left, and what's left might be only a financial obligation, leaving room for a bracha achrona, which is the way the Bach pastors and rules, and then at the very end, the question of how that affects another issue, that's an issue that was left open by this Shuvah. And that is a responsible day for the 6th of Av, with the Bach letting us know about prohibitions that are violated and how they affect the brachos that we can or cannot make on those items. Have a great day, and thanks for joining me. Bye.